You're listening to Discover Hope with Pastor Tom Leake of Hope Bible Church in Columbia, Maryland.
He's our Father. The answer is, well, it needs to be pure from the heart, and it needs to result in taking care of the helpless. It needs to be not about you, but about others. If you've tasted of the goodness of God, if you've tasted of the mercy of God, if you've tasted of the love of God, if you've experienced the grace of God in your life, if that's true of you, then it translates into, I'm going to care for somebody else. Look, there's somebody in need. Oh, that's going to mess up my schedule because, see, I had a wonderful afternoon planned for myself. But this person's in need. That's pure and undefiled religion, you see.
Orphans and widows in the early church culture were helpless and marginalized. They could not repay or help those who helped in any way. Today, Pastor Tom will teach you that helping the helpless is a demonstration of obedience and undefiled faith. By unselfishly and sacrificially serving and helping those who can in no way pay you back, you communicate their value and the true heart of God. Displaying the love and mercy of God is a sign of spiritual growth and maturity. Now, here's Pastor Tom in the book of James chapter 1 as he continues his message, True Religion.
We are reminded over and over and over again, keep a tight rein on your tongue. If you're a religious person, if you're a Christian, you need to bridle your own tongue. Don't worry about someone else's tongue. Work on your tongue. Many of the Proverbs just say that. I'm going to read some of them for you. Proverbs 12:18. There's one who speaks rashly. And then it says this, like the thrusts of a sword. You know, gotcha. And that's what it is. But the tongue of the wise brings healing. Does your tongue hurt or does your tongue heal? Proverbs 15:4, a soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit. Man, that's what a tongue can do. Proverbs 18:21, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Proverbs 21:23, he who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from trouble. A lot of times we have trouble in our lives because we didn't guard our tongues. I put myself in that category. I say something, I'm like, nah, I got a whole bunch of problems. I shouldn't have said that. If I hadn't said that, I wouldn't have all these troubles, but I said it, so now I have the troubles, no taking it back. I got to deal with the trouble and I got to work all the way through that. How much trouble we would avoid if we just held on to our tongues. The north wind brings forth rain and a backbiting tongue and angry countenance. Proverbs 25:23. Proverbs 26:28. A lying tongue hates those it crushes and a flattering mouth works ruin. All kinds of ways the tongue can hurt. It flatters, it lies, it deceives, it boasts, it slanders. All those things. The tongue can be vitriolic, hateful, arrogant, slanderous, boisterous, cunning, and all those things hurt. Did you know that self-control was one of the list of the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians 5:23, having control over what you say? Paul wrote in Ephesians 4:29, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for what? For edification, for building up. Your tongue should always be about how can I help other people be built up. Sometimes you need to correct them in order to build them up, but you have to do that in humility. You have to do that with patience and gentleness so it's obvious you're not trying to put them down and put yourself up. If you're correcting someone, it's because you're trying to correct them and help them. You're on their side. So your spirit needs to show you're on their side. Don't correct them and say, well, I'm correcting someone because that's what I do. I correct people. Yeah, but you sound like you're hurting them. You know, well, that's my gift. Well, keep that gift to yourself. Make sure you're edifying. Make sure you're building up. If you have to correct, look to yourself and then be constructive in the way that you correct someone else. We need correction, but we need godly correctors in the church. Be edifying. Only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment. How do you build someone else up? Think what their need is. If they're having trouble in some area in their spirit and you've discerned that, then help them with that. Talk to them gently. If they misunderstand you, tell them I think you've misunderstood me. I'm here to help. When your feelings settle down, I'll come back and help. And make sure your tongue is building up. Control your tongue. Sometimes the tongue has to say nothing, wait for the opportune moment, and then say something. So let's go back to this person who thinks he's religious. He thinks he's religious, but he doesn't bridle his tongue. What is the conclusion? He has deceived his own what? Heart. The tongue is that important. If you can't bridle the tongue, whatever you think you are is not true. I'm sorry, but that's what it says. It says if you can't bridle your tongue, your religion's not true. You may have thought it's true. You may have been going to church services for a long time, but it hasn't gotten on the inside of you yet. Man, you need to wake up, because this is true. You deceive your own heart. See, really, we're talking about the heart here. You're deceiving your own heart because you see what comes out of the tongue reveals the heart, right? Jesus said that. It's not what you eat that defiles you. And he was letting the Jewish people know, it's not what you eat that defiles you. It's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. It's what comes out of your mouth that defiles you. You speak from your mind. You know, people say, I speak my mind. That's right, you speak your mind and your mind is ugly. The heart is another word for mind. It's not feelings, it's thinking. So you're speaking your heart. You're speaking from what comes in the center of you and you're speaking it. And that reveals your heart. And so if it's not bridled and all this ugly stuff comes out, that lets you know there's no religion on the inside. So Jesus taught that. That was in Matthew 15, by the way. So if a man comes to church, he sings some just beautiful songs. He goes home and he treats his wife poorly. Yeah, never do this. Yeah, you're no good with that. Yells at the kids. How many times I gotta tell you? Cusses at the coworkers. Cuts down his fellow believers. I can't believe so-and-so did such and such a church. Can you believe that? Then his religion is, it's worthless. It's not a true religion. It's phony, okay? You know, if someone comes to church and they're quoting Bible verses. Very impressive. Look at all those Bible verses he quotes. He must memorize a lot of verses. Even better, look at the theologians he quotes. Oh, man. Got this quote, that quote. Posts them on Facebook, Twitters them out, tweets them out. What's the word? I don't know. Pumping them out. Great theologians. Names his cat Calvin even. I mean, he's a religious guy. The dog is Knox. Religious guy. But he's rude to other people. You know, the Christians that have the bumper stickers, three or four of them on there. Jesus is Lord, blah, blah, blah. And then they're as rude as all get out. It's bad testimony. You know, you put a fish on the back of your car, you better drive better, by the way. That's why I don't put one on mine. No, I'm just kidding. Holy Spirit says the man's religion is worthless. Write him off. He professes to be something, but it's not true. He presents himself as pursuing God, but you can be discerning about him or sadly maybe about you that that's not true. Now, keep in mind, there's nothing wrong with being religious. There was a time in my life where I went around telling people, look, I'm not religious, I just love the Lord. Well, I didn't understand that religion actually is a good thing. Religion is directed towards God. It's the perversion of religion that's the problem. You know, you can't actually love the Lord Jesus if you're not religious, because that would mean then you're not going to church and you're not supporting the church and you're not praying and you're not listening to his word. And guess what? Those are all religious things. So obviously Jesus was religious. His disciples were religious. So you need to be religious. So the religious part is fine, just not bare and empty religion. Religion alone doesn't cut it with God. Now, you grow up in the church and listen to this, children. You grow up in the church, you know, and you've been coming, singing. You've been doing. You might even be part of the youth ministry. Maybe you're older now. You're still coming, but you think you're a Christian because you're here and maybe even because you're baptized. The water doesn't really do anything to you, right? None of that stuff means you're a Christian. None of that stuff means you have the religion inside of you. Jesus has to be invited all the way in. You know, sometimes people want a little bit of religion. They want, you know, Jesus is a nice idea. What a sweet thing, Jesus. To have a little bit of Jesus in your life, a little bit of blessing, a little bit of, that's nice. That's nice. But he doesn't want to come in on the side. He wants to come in, take over. That's the thing about the Lord is he's actually the Lord. You know what the Lord does? He commands you what to do. So if you don't invite him in that way, you haven't invited him in because that's who he is. People say, do you have to obey Jesus as Lord to be saved? Well, that's what believing in Jesus as Lord means. If you'll confess with your mouth Jesus as Lord, believe in your heart God raised him from the dead, you'll be saved. What does it mean to confess Jesus as Lord? Well, Jesus answered it. He said, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and don't do the things I say? Can you imagine being the Lord, being called Lord, Lord? You give out a command and people just don't obey it. Why do you call me Lord, Lord? That's what the word means. It means master, master. King, king. It means when you confess Jesus as your Lord, it means now you're ready to follow him. Your life's going to change. And that has to affect the tongue, wouldn't you agree? Because it affects the heart, right? So if it affects the heart, then it has to affect the language, the mouth. You got it. And if it hasn't, then all the other religious words, all the other paraphernalia, ignore it. It's a smokescreen. All right, next test, helping the helpless. Verse 27, look at it. Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their distress. This introduces also another topic that James is going to expand upon later. He's going to talk about this in chapter 2, a faith that will help others, a faith that looks out for those who are weaker or poor. It's interesting, he's introducing these three themes as tests here, and when we get into chapter 2, we're going to see one theme. We get into chapter 3, we'll see another theme, and chapter 4, we'll see another theme. But this mercy and love is very important here, and he brings it up. He says, true religion, and he calls it pure and undefiled religion. And by the way, those two words are basically saying the same thing. Pure is sort of the positive side. Undefiled is the negative side. You're pure and undefiled. They work together. What is pure is undefiled. What is undefiled is pure. You know, if you were looking for a nice glass of water and you said it was pure, that would mean it would be undefiled, right? If you said it's undefiled, it'd be pure. There's no dirt in it. There's no poison in it. There's no contaminations in it. That's what it is. Pure and undefiled religion means, well, it means that it's not defiled by things that he doesn't specify here, but we could fill in the blank, couldn't it? Pure and undefiled religion defiled by what? Well, if you're helping the orphans and the widows? That means that you're not all about yourself. We're going to talk about the orphans and widows in a minute. They're very helpless. They can't help you back. So if you're taking time to give your time, your money, your connection, reputation with helping those who are kind of really low down in society and can't help you back, then there's a lot of things that are true about you. We can deduce from that you don't have a love of money. So that would mean love of money would defile your religion, I think, right? And that's 1 Timothy 6. The love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. Money is not the evil. It's the love of money that's evil. Love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many a pang. That's 1 Timothy 6. You would not have a love of selfish displays. You'd not be thinking, I can't wait to get past my obligations because then I'm going to run out and I'm going to go, what's that blank in your life? Video games, going to the sports game, whatever that is that you want to get to that thing, get past church, get past work, get past all these obligations, please, I just want to get to the, and whatever fills your mind, like I just want to get to that spot, and that fills your mind too much, that's defiling your religion, see? A love of fame maybe, some selfish thing, or some fame, or some money, or something for you. Something about your reputation, maybe, that defiles your religion. No, we want to have pure and undefiled religion. And then it says, in the sight of God our Father. Isn't it interesting he calls him Father here because he's going to talk about the orphans and widows, and he's a father to the fatherless, and he takes care of the widows, right? So I'm practicing my religion before God the Father. Oh, yeah, you have to practice religion before God. That's one of the mistakes. Someone who's into religion, as they think they're practicing the religion before other people. That's why they're all religious on Sundays, but not Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Because they're practicing their religion for the sake of what other people think of them. But this says, no, the good religion is in the sight of God the Father. When does he look at me? All the time. He looks at me all the time. The thing about him is he doesn't just look at me, he looks inside of me. He probes my mind. He searches my heart. So how do I have pure and undefiled religion in the sight of God, who's my Father? He's our Father. The answer is, well, it needs to be pure from the heart, and it needs to result in taking care of the helpless. It needs to be not about you, but about others. If you've tasted of the goodness of God, if you've tasted of the mercy of God, if you've tasted of the love of God, if you've experienced the grace of God in your life, if that's true of you, then it translates into I'm going to care for somebody else. Look, there's somebody in need. Oh, that's going to mess up my schedule because, see, I had a wonderful afternoon planned for myself. But this person's in need. That's pure and undefiled religion, you see. By the way, God is not our mother. Did you get that? Did you look in there? Please, next time someone says God is mother, just take him right here. He's Father. So how do you know he's Father? Because he said he was. You know? If I was a father, walked in the store and I said, I'm a father, someone called me a mother, I'd be kind of upset. Nothing wrong with being a mother. Being a mother is a fine thing. Being a mother is a wonderful thing. I'm not a mother, I'm a father. God's a father, he calls himself father. And these translations of the Bible and these people going around saying God is mother also, no, he's father, that's what he said. He's the originator, he's the creator, he's the recreator in Christ. We get our life from his son, and his son is like the father. His son reveals the father. Your heavenly dad is watching you this week. He wants to know if you're practicing pure and undefiled religion. How can I do that? Visit orphans and widows in their distress. There it is. There's the target. That's the bullseye to aim at. Visit the widows and orphans in their distress. Not when they're having it good, but when they are in their distress. In the sphere of all the pressure that there is in being an orphan and a widow, when it's very hard for them, when they can't give you anything back, when all they're going to do is take your time and your money, visit them. And visit them does not mean have a gregarious chat with them. Visit them, the very implication of the word in Greek is that you're coming ready to help them in some way. Who are the orphans? You know who orphans are. They don't have any parents. They're deprived of their parents by death or abandonment. They can't fend for themselves. Often they can't feed themselves. They don't have a guardian. No one's looking after them. They're exposed to elements. Many of them die. Widows just means a woman who was married lost her husband to death. Widows in that culture are not usually able to care for themselves. They couldn't go out and get a job. There was no job for women outside of the home except for the occupation called prostitution. They didn't want to go do that. Widows could go from having a very secure economic situation to almost instant insecurity. They're in distress. A complete change of lifestyle. James says widows and orphans need to be visited in their distress. Can you imagine what distress there is economically, health-wise? Concern about safety and protection for the orphans and the widows. So when you go to visit them, come with something in hand. Come carrying something. Here, I heard that you need this. And I also brought this along. You know, and I gave it a little bit of thought, and I thought you might need this. Do you need this? I've come ready to help. By the way, who's going to fix the lock on your back door? And what other needs do you have? Can we get something for you? You come ready to visit them. Why did James pick on this thing to show true religion? I'll tell you why. Because this is a display of love, mercy. See, if you have true faith in Christ, it's going to work its way into your life, into the fabric of the way you think, so that now you want to start loving other people. No, I'm not talking about loving your friends. They've always been easy. They're your friends, you like them, you party with them, you do things, you invite them over. Loving the people who are not your friends, who are not like you. You don't necessarily enjoy, but you love them because they have needs. Faith, Paul says, needs to work itself through love. In fact, you look at all the writers of the New Testament, they say, if you want to try to figure out if someone has real faith in Jesus Christ, look to see if there's love there. Is the root of the tree good? I can't see it. It's down beneath the ground. It's in the dirt. You know, I was out digging roots up the other day. It's hard digging up roots. I'm sweating away. I was having a good time, though. I just like that, just being outside in the mud and the dirt and all that. But you don't know what's going on with the roots, so you dig down in there, and you're like, wow, look at all those roots. There's a lot of roots down there. But if you want to know if the root is good, you look for the fruit on the tree. Oh, that's a good fruit. Must be a good root. That's what it is. With you. If your faith is good, if your faith is real, if your faith in Jesus has landed in the right spot, they're going to look at the fruit. What's the fruit? Love. Love for other people. And where's the best way of testing whether or not you have love? If you love those that can't give anything back to you. 1 John 3. Whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Can't. Just a real practical way of evaluating that theology. That theology says if you have true faith, you're going to have love. And I know that love will grow. I'm not talking about being an instant saint here. But there should be something in you that's saying, I want to give. I want to help. I want to do this. I just learned to love this person. And I know 3 years ago, I never would have loved them like that. That's what should be happening. Paul said faith works through love. Peter said, since you have, in obedience to the truth, purified your souls for a sincere love of the brethren, fervently love one another from the heart. James says love is the royal law in chapter 2. Jesus put it this way in Luke 14. It says he went out and said to the one who had invited him, he was invited to something, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives. Now, he didn't mean never do that. Or rich neighbors. Otherwise, they may also invite you in return, and that will be your repayment. But when you give a reception, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, since they do not have the means to repay you. For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Don't you love that? The resurrection of the righteous is coming. I'm going to be repaid. Are you going to be paid anything at the resurrection of the righteous? You got to start making some investments now, see? Who are the distressed in our society? This is a harder question because government has taken over so much now of what used to be the role of the church and families. Government takes over more and more and more, and people say that's a good thing, and they're going to care for the poor, and there's this protection, and that really was never the design for government that God had from the beginning. It was really the role of the church, and it was the role of the people. It was the role of the families to get out there and meet needs. And now you look around, and you're like, well, who's poor? We have a poverty level here in America. It's not really that poor when you compare it. There's millions of people that are in the poverty level. You put them overseas and be like, man, you have a lot. You have a lot. Kind of hard to figure out who are the real poor in our society. Obviously, in some countries, developing countries, poorer countries, there's some real poverty there. That would be some of the ones that need our input. Maybe some of them are the homeless. Some people are homeless because of bad habits. Some people are homeless because of bad things that have happened to them. And it takes sometimes discernment to know what's going on. You know, some people are locked up in prison because they deserve to be locked up in prison, right? Orphans and widows, he pulls them out because they didn't deserve that. They didn't deserve mom and daddy to die on them. The husband just, you know, went and died on them. Now what? You know? And then there was no safety net for them there. Maybe the handicapped in our society. Maybe in some cases the homeless. We have a mercy ministry we began here. Thomas was leading that. Join him, help him. He's trying to find those, you know, single parents maybe. Single mothers have several kids. They need some help. Get out there. Some of them are not teachable. Maybe some of them made some bad mistakes, but we want to have mercy to them. We want to reach out. We want to care for them. Do you have a neighbor that has needs? Looks like they have real needs. And maybe they did make some bad decisions, and maybe they're suffering from that. And maybe they've learned a little bit of a lesson there. You can still go and help them, right? They're still suffering. Maybe there's someone in church. We have a Helping Hands Fund here, a benevolence fund, we call it. You can donate to that so that folks in the church can be cared for. You look for them. You open your eyes. Inner city ministry, you help them out. And help the church too, please, because you see, if we had more of you volunteering your time, then we could start more ministries to help the poor. We just need your time. We need people to coordinate and lead and do that. When you have a heart for the needy, your wallet comes out of your pocket. It comes in your hand. You open it up and you find something in there and you make a payment. That's what happens. You open your heart and you open your wallet. You open your heart and you open your pocketbook. That's how it works, okay? You open up your heart and you write a check. And so that's how it is. And then you give time. You don't say you don't have time. You make time and you find who you can care for. So that's the second test. We come to the third and last test. And that is keeping yourself unstained by the world. Again, this is going to jump to chapter 4. And James is going to talk all about worldliness and the love of the world there and how incompatible that is with God. We're going to get a little bit of a sneak preview to that right here. And he says, keep yourself unstained by the world. In other words, don't let, it's kind of the clothing analogy. You have some nice threads on you. You got some nice clothes on you. You don't want to go with your nice clothes and go do a dirty job right now, right? So you are in a world that's dirty, is the point.
Serving and helping others takes sacrifice and selflessness. It's not always easy, but when you do, you clearly demonstrate love to them. Today, Pastor Tom encouraged you to recognize the importance of helping the helpless. When you display love and mercy to them, they are able to see the heart of God and see a strong and obedient faith. So, consider today who you might serve and what God may be calling you to give up. Discover Hope is a listener-supported ministry, and we'd like to offer you the opportunity to be a part of sharing the gospel message. Would you join us in praying for our listeners? Pray that the love and grace of Jesus will be evident in each new broadcast, and that many would come to know the hope of salvation. Thanks for praying. If you feel led to contribute financially to this ministry as well, you can do so by visiting hopebible.org and clicking the Giving tab at the top of the page. We appreciate every amount given and use it to continue producing the messages of Pastor Tom Leake that you hear on Discover Hope. The world is wicked, yet alluring to even the most faithful soul. However, you're called to walk in the world and be a light in that darkness. Yet you'll learn next time on Discover Hope that though you're called to be in the world, you can't be like the world. Pastor Tom will exhort you to keep yourself unstained by the world. Keeping yourself morally pure in a world of filth will demonstrate a strong and true faith. There's much more to learn from the book of James, so we hope you'll tune in again next time. If you'd like to listen again to today's teaching or share it with your friends and family, you'll find it online at hopebible.org. Thanks for joining us on Discover Hope.